So James, thank you so much, man, for joining us here today on Press for Truth Live. We got a lot to break down here today. Obviously, so much going on right now with this talk of the missing 28 pages. I want to briefly read a little bit here from Activist Post article that's just recently out. Saudi Arabia threatens to crash the dollar if Congress exposes their role in the 9/11 attacks. A bombshell report by the New York Times has revealed that Saudi Arabia, the third largest holder of U.S. Treasury bills in the world behind China and Japan, has warned the Obama administration and Congress that they will begin liquidating their U.S. assets if Congress passes a bill allowing for the Saudi government to be held responsible for their role in the terror attacks of 9/11. So, James, you know, what do you make of this? It almost seems as this 28 pages over the last few years has been an ace up the sleeve or some sort of thing they've just been waiting to use. What's your make of, you know, this coming out now in the last week?
This is, it is absolutely 100% a limited hangout that, as you say, was implanted in the official story of 9/11 since the very beginning. And we have to understand that there are several layers of spin behind which the actual story is hiding here. And surprise, surprise, guess what? The real truth about 9/11 isn't going to come out through 60 Minutes puff pieces talking about, you know, quoting Senator Bob Graham or Porter Goss or characters like these who were intimately involved in what happened on 9/11. So we have to question why it's coming out right now. Firstly, with regards to the idea that Saudi is dumping this money because they're going to be exposed, even that is a much more complicated story. One of the things that Saudi Arabia is preparing for, much less protesting, is the idea that if they are sued for 9/11, then their U.S. assets will be confiscated and they will not be able to divest themselves of their U.S. assets. So this would just be a preparatory move for that, more so than a threat. But even regardless, the idea that this will crash the dollar is highly dubious because over the past 20 months, China has divested itself of $780 billion of U.S. treasuries, and the U.S. treasury market is still going strong. So it is possible to absorb such a shock over, and I mean, the full treasury market is $15 trillion. So a lot of that is hype and spin, but all of this is directed towards what you pointed out there is really a type of geopolitical warfare that's going on right now between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. This has always been the implanted little bit in the 9/11 story that they censored, they covered up, they put in the classified 28 pages, and they told everyone, hey, look, these are the classified 28 pages you can't see about foreign involvement. And at the time, everyone everywhere was reporting it was Saudi Arabia. They're covering up Saudi Arabia. It's about Saudi Arabia. I remember seeing those reports on CBC News back 14 years ago, whenever the report first came out. I have a front page magazine article from July 2003 that links to the New York Post that is every single aspect of the story that 60 Minutes is now reporting on was all there in 2003 in mainstream publications. Why is it coming out now? Why in this way? Why is there a full forecourt press about it? And why are we suddenly now being directed to hate Saudi Arabia? This is clearly about geopolitical machinations, not about 9/11 truth.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it begs the question, because if they are going after Saudi Arabia, I wonder, what is this going to mean, do you think, for the future of the petrodollar? And, you know, are they going to get off of having to, buy oil with dollars? What are we looking at here for the future of the petrodollar?
I have been noting the growing rift between Saudi Arabia and the United States over the last few years, and I've been talking about this on the podcast periodically from time to time, saying that there is a wedge being driven between Saudi Arabia and the U.S., and of course their alliance is the backbone of the petrodollar, which has been one of the fundamental underlying parts of the U.S. dollar hegemony since the gold standard was taken off in the 1970s, since Nixon de-chained the dollar. And what has been one of the fundamental things propping it up is this petrodollar, which is based on that U.S.-Saudi alliance that was first really cemented in during World War II and has only expanded since then. And of course, with the machinations of people like Kissinger in the 70s really compounded into what it is today. There is a rift that's been growing for years now. This is part of a geopolitical back and forth cat and mouse that's being played right now with Saudi Arabia seeing the writing on the wall in a number of ways, one of which is that a couple of years ago, China became the world's largest oil importer. So Saudi Arabia's real bread is going to be buttered in China, assuming oil is going to be continue to be their bread and butter. But even that, longer term, is not going to be the case. And that's why Saudi Arabia is now talking about selling off part of Saudi Aramco and creating this $2 trillion slush fund that they can use to try to transition the country off of oil. In a number of ways, the fundamental alliance between U.S. and Saudi Arabia that's existed for decades is shifting. And I think the U.S. is trying to keep that stick and say, hey, guys, you better not get too far out from under our umbrella because we can hit you with this stick at any time. Mm. And that's why back a few years ago when I was reporting on this, I did a story called 9/11, the CIA and the Art of the Hangout, where we talked about, again, at the time, this 28 pages and the information about these two alleged hijackers who allegedly hijacked Flight 77, which allegedly hit the Pentagon, around which all of this 28-page nonsense is revolving. At the time, I interviewed Kevin Ryan about it, and he called it, I think brilliantly, he called it the Get Into Saudi Arabia Free Card. Mm. That's what this 28 pages is about. That's why you've got Bob Graham and Porter Goss and all of these Congress critters who helped participate in the 9/11 cover-up coming out about this. And that's why this is really not about 9/11 truth. It is about having the potential to have, if not outright warfare, at least a type of geopolitical or financial warfare against Saudi Arabia in order to keep them in line.
What we're hearing, you know, to the coming from the mainstream is, well, don't you know, 15 of the 19 hijackers were from Saudi Arabia, so that goes to say something. But maybe they're forgetting the fact, or they don't know, that the CIA was involved with the hijackers. I mean, that has been uncovered. I mean,
yeah, I wonder why.
Yeah.
There's so many things to point out here. I mean, one of which, yes, okay, 15 of the 19 alleged hijackers, again, Saudis, coming through with Saudi passports. But let's take one aspect of that. Where did the majority of those 15 get their visa to enter the United States? It was at the Jeddah Consulate. And I've interviewed J. Michael Springman a couple of times, who worked at the Jeddah Consulate back in the late 1980s, back during the Soviet-Afghan War, when Osama bin Laden was the U.S. golden boy. And he was constantly denying people visas to enter the country because they didn't meet the basic requirements. They couldn't say why they were going, how long they were going to be there, where they were going to be staying, what they wanted to do in the United States. So he would reject their visas, their visa applications, and that rejection would be overruled by people above him in the consulate there. Eventually, he got the inside skinny on some of the machinations that was going on there. There were CIA agents in the consulate, as there usually are in places, in embassies and consulates around the world, that were overriding him because, again, Osama bin Laden was their golden boy in Afghanistan, and they were bringing bin Laden men over to the U.S. for training so that then they could ship them back to Afghan to fight those damn Ruskies. That was going on at the Jeddah Consulate in the 1980s. Lo and behold, a decade or so later, you have all of these 9/11 alleged hijackers getting their visas at that very consulate through a Visa Express program that was put in place explicitly just a few months before 9/11 that waived all the usual types of requirements and paperwork that these people would need so that they could just get straight into the country and, get caught up in the 9/11 plot in whatever sense that was running. I mean, that's just one of the layers of this story. The other is that you look at the 60 Minutes report on the 28 pages, for example. They're pointing to this Fahad al-Thumairi character who's related to the Saudi embassy or consulate on the West Coast there in the United States, who was apparently linked to these two alleged hijackers, al-Maidar and al-Hazmi, who were staying there in Los Angeles, the first two of the alleged hijackers who got into the U.S. And they're saying, oh, look, there's this Saudi connection, and look at this other Saudi funder who was there with them, neglecting to mention Abdu Sattar Sheikh, who was an FBI informant from 94 to 2003 that these two hijackers were living with, the alleged hijackers were living with. during their time in the United States. And the official story is, yes, okay, this guy was an FBI informant, but he didn't tell his FBI handler, Stephen Butler, he didn't tell them anything about these two guys. He just mentioned them by first name, just in casual passing. He didn't think they were a threat, so he didn't pass along that information. Just like the CIA didn't pass along the information to the FBI that these two people were coming into the country. Just like the NSA didn't tell anyone that they had recorded meetings of these two hijackers or alleged hijackers in Malaysia, meeting with other known Al-Qaeda agents the year before. All of these things, all of this information didn't get out somehow. Again, all swirling around, and now we're getting just one thread of that, which is, hey, look at this Saudi connection to these guys. Look at these Saudi handlers. Look at the Saudi money. Don't look at any of the other connections or surrounding context that would problematize that story. And then again, of course, the bigger, bigger, bigger question is, who are these guys? Were they hijackers at all? And how do we know that? And what actually happened on 9/11? Of course, none of this is going to be brought out. It's all going to come back down to what they already have implanted in this story, which is that it was the Saudis. And it wasn't even the Saudis knowingly trying to commit or help in this terrorist attack. It was just that they were funding these Al-Qaeda guys. And so, you know, it ended up turning into 9/11. And there's an even other layer of this onion. I hate to complicate it this much, but this is the craziness we're dealing with. Richard Clark, a couple of years ago, came out and was saying CIA Director George Tenet was keeping information from him as national security counterterrorism czar. Was keeping information from him about these two alleged hijackers, and he was putting that blame on George Tenet. And his theory was that the CIA was trying to flip these two guys. They were trying to recruit them, but it got out of control and they went out and did the 9/11 plot. And, you know, lo and behold, just another intelligence failure. And again, what's the ultimate solution to a problem like that? Give these intelligence agencies more power, because more money, more power, more control, more funding, so that they can properly do these missions and properly communicate with each other and share all their data that the NSA is snarfling up through their data centers. So ultimately, in every way, this benefits the establishment and the system and the inside cronies. And unless and until I see some orange jumpsuits on Bush and Cheney and all the neocons and all the intelligence operatives in all of the places that were helping in 9/11, I'm going to say that this is nothing more and nothing less than a limited hangout.
Yeah, I would agree, James. It seems to be shifting the blame certainly away from the American government and more towards Saudi Arabia. And now you have, you know, Obama saying that he's going to plead to Congress to block the passing of this piece of legislation into law. And people are saying, oh, well, Obama's covering up for the Saudis. And, you know, Hillary was sort of asked about it. And she just kind of said, well, of course, we have to do whatever we have to do, you know, to fight terrorists. So it seems like just such a psychological operation, really, on the people right now to get them not focused on the real solution and the real the people who actually caused this, but rather on other matters, essentially. So I think Obama is actually going to Saudi Arabia tomorrow. I don't know. I think the bill is still on the table. What do you think might happen if this does pass? I mean, I don't know what the timeline is when this is expected to go through. But do you think anything will happen if this does pass?
Well, if it does pass, again, the Saudis would pretty much be expected to sell as much of their U.S. Held assets as they can, because, again, all of that would be confiscated and confiscatable in the event of a successful lawsuit against them. So that would be the expected outcome of that. And as I say, that's not exactly something. And depending how it's done, if they dump it all at one time on the U.S. Treasury market, that would cause havoc and could severely affect the dollar. But assuming they try to do it in a way that's somewhat more of an orderly divestment, it could be easily absorbed by the $15 trillion treasury market. So again, that's speculation. But really, I think what's going on here is, I mean, it's Uncle Sam holding the pit bull, the attack pit bull, and saying, oh, look at this attack pit bull. If I let go of this leash, she's going to come get you. I think that's what's happening here, which is why I don't think that this bill is probably going to pass. There's enough of propaganda that's been thrown out there by now that something of some sort has to eventuate from this. whether that's diplomatically. It might even be the declassification of the 28 pages. Mm-hmm. We might actually see that, but not the the going ahead of the lawsuit. I could imagine that scenario because even Saudi Arabia has in the past said, declassify those 28 pages. We want to see what's in them too. Because what's ultimately going to be found in there is not the specific connections that will tie it back, as I say, to the CIA and FBI and NSA and all the other alphabet supers that were involved in this. It's going to be kind of nebulous. Oh, well, there was some money that came from these people. You know, it was just because they were funding all these different people and organizations that they knew was linked to terror, but they didn't know what was going on. That's the extent that I expect this hangout to go to. And maybe a few heads will roll, but none of the important ones. And as I say, nothing will come back to any of the people that we know on the inside who had to have been involved in this plot. And of course, all of this diverts all the attention away from any of the other aspects of what 9/11 Truth talks about or has identified over the years. All of the, I mean, did Saudi Arabia coordinate the drills that were going on in that morning? Did they, were they running Able Danger and able to somehow stop Able Danger from going forward with its investigation into people like Mohammed Atta? Were they running a PTEC and their that was working on the interoperability of the Pentagon and the FAA on the morning of 9/11? Were they involved in all of these other things? Were they rigging WTC-7 to go down? I mean, there's so much more to this story, and now we're being asked to concentrate on this 28 pages as if that's the whole clue to the entire 9/11 puzzle.
Yeah, no, I agree. They seem to always kind of pull these ones out when they need them. I find it interesting, too, that this is coming out almost in the same week as this Panama Papers release. You know, they got these aces up their sleeves that they can kind of use at any time. And it is interesting that we're hearing this in the same week as that leak. I mean, it seems kind of obvious to me.
Yeah.
So, I guess any final thoughts, I mean, on just the bigger picture here, on what people need to understand moving forward? Because we have made some good headways with 9/11 Truth, and we certainly don't want to take two steps backwards. So, you know, what sort of advice might you have for the researchers or people looking into this, you know, moving forward?
Well, as with any limited hangout, there will still be something put forward out there. And even if it is only the sense in the public that, hey, wow, there really has been something that's been covered up for the last 15 years that's only coming out now because of political pressure. I mean, even the most brainwashed of the brainwashed will be able to understand that there's something fundamentally wrong with the entire system and the process if that is able to happen. So if this does come out, if the pages are declassified and if there is more coverage of that, yes, it will only go a very short distance towards 9/11 Truth, but it is at least the potential foot in the door for a larger conversation about that. And I hope that people in the alt media and people who support the alt media will be ready and willing and able to get that information out there and inject it into the mainstream conversation. I mean, over the past decade that you and I have been doing this, I know I've seen it, I'm sure you've seen it from your perspective, the alt media has made incredible inroads in the general conversation that's happening in society, to the point where people understand what a false flag event is, even if they don't believe 9/11 was one. We have made some progress with that. I think there's a lot more progress that we can make, and we can use stories like this to leverage some real truth about 9/11. So if it's, I don't know, I mean, sharing the 9/11 conspiracy theory video, if you like that video, share that out and say, hey, they've lied to us about 9/11 for 15 years. What else are they keeping from us? I mean, that's the potential good point of this, and I think we have to use that leverage to try to get the real truth about 9/11 out there.
Well said, James. Let's use this to up our efforts to get the actual truth out, you know, and to, you know, pick through some of their BS essentially. So once again, James Corbett, thanks for joining us. We'll have your links in the description. Take care, my friend.
Appreciate it, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure.